RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. You're listening to RMU Chat. Ben Cole, Nick Bozzelli, Mike Funyak, and Dante Vermey here with you. We're going to start really quickly. There was a lot of news that came out on Tuesday of this week. And the first thing that we really want to get into is the fact that we have a new president. Well, kind of. We have an interim president. And joining me now to explain that is Delaney Hassel from Century Media. Delaney, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
So we have the interim president, and we can happily say that it is somebody that's in-house, somebody that we're very familiar with.
Yes. Our interim president is the current provost, Damon L. Jamison. He is the provost right now. He has been for quite some time, and he will not become the interim president until June 30th of this year.
Okay. So we have a little bit of time. He has a little bit of time until he starts his kind of presidency. The big question that I have right now is how long of a placeholder is he going to be as the interim president before we actually have somebody that is just called president?
What the board is trying to get across, I guess, is that they don't know because they don't want to rush it. They're very adamant with not rushing things. They really want to find the right president no matter how long it takes. So they're not going to rush it. They don't really know, but it looks like we're probably not going to have one for a while.
It's really interesting that they say that they're not rushing, but at the same time, they also say that they really want to try to have somebody for the 2015-2016 school year.
Yeah, it's very conflicting.
And at the beginning of it. So that's what, give or take, end of August, beginning of September.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be able to do this in the 4 months that they're looking at. We probably will have Provost Jamison as the interim president, I would think, until at least the spring semester, but nothing's official.
Okay. Well, now that Jamison is becoming the interim president, does that mean that we're going to have a new provost? Or what's going to happen now? Because a lot of gears very well could be moving.
That's the big question. I actually am going to be interviewing Rich Harshman, who is heading this whole search, in probably the next half hour. And that's one of my questions is, does this mean that Provost Jamison is going to take on the role of both roles, which is very stressful? I don't know if that would be a good or bad thing. Is there going to be an interim provost? Are they looking for a provost? What's the whole plan with that?
I don't know where I was going. I forget what I was just about to say. I completely blanked. Oh, no, I wanted to know your opinion on this. I wanted to know, do you think it's smart for the university to name an interim president now? Or, I mean, because it's almost just like Jamison very well just could be the placeholder.
That's what, I mean, my opinion on it is, yeah, he's a placeholder and that's what he's probably going to be. It's just kind of someone to oversee everything, to be the president. I mean, I guess it's good that they did it early, so that there's no question and they have a person set in place, but now everyone's just going to be like, when is everything going to happen? But at the beginning of May, the applications are due for all the applicants or candidates that they want, and
Then
they're going to start interviewing in May. So that's a good step. That's
okay.
A big step.
Now, I'm curious as to if Jamison's actually going to be in talking to the possible applicants, if he's actually going to be involved with this.
Yeah, it depends if he's on the committees. We haven't heard if he is on the committees or not, but it would almost seem like, is that crossing a line because he's the interim president?
Mm-hmm.
But then would you want his input? It's kind of the same with if you wanted DeLomo's input.
And whenever more information comes out, you're going to be putting it up on Central Media, right?
I will.
Awesome.
Look for this article.
Great. Delaney Hassel, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to take a very short break. Whenever we come back, more news coming out of the Robert Morris University campus on Tuesday. There's the possibility of a new facility coming, and the financial tag on it is very intriguing. And Hannah Smith is going to be joining us to talk a little bit about that. Whenever we come back, you're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Ben Cole, Nick Bozzelli, and Mike Funyak. But right now we're going to be joined by Hannah Smith, another fine representative of Century Media. And Hannah has been covering the announcement that the Board of Trustees just came out with, not only the fact that, Hannah, we're going to have a new, possibly a new athletic facility on campus, but the financial price tag that they want to get at.
Yeah, it's a pretty hefty price tag that.
Yeah, it's, what is it, $50
million? $50 million, yes, that they plan to fundraise.
Now, do we know how they're going to fundraise? Are we going to be having bake sales on the Nicholson lawn for the next 2.5 years, hoping to get $50 million? Or I know that they're not going to be doing that, but do they have an idea of how they're going to get this money?
Well, right now I've asked that question, and the only thing that's been disclosed to me is that they have ideas in mind, and they are going to be meeting with investors soon. I know previously that they had a marketing campaign when they had professionals come in here and make a commercial. I actually got to be a part of that, and a few other people too, but from what I hear, that's been kind of kicked to the can. So I'm not sure what their plan is right now. I'm still trying to work on finding that out, but they're going to have to be finding somebody that is willing to put forth a lot of money.
I think it's really interesting that this is going to be all completely fundraising whenever we have an athletic facility right now on campus in the Sewell Center that could easily be refurbished, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I guess they're looking to, what they said is that the program is becoming bigger and they're outgrowing the Sewell Center. So they want to turn that into a rec center. And then that's going to turn John Jay into more classrooms and so forth.
Yeah, and I think it's also really interesting timing that we had the official announcement of Andy Toole with his contract extension earlier in the week, and then we have the announcement of the new facility possibly coming on campus. One other thing I'm really curious about is, yeah, this is going to be for athletics and stuff. We know that it's primarily going to be for basketball, primarily going to be for volleyball. What else could this facility give to the campus?
Concerts, apparently.
Concerts?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, maybe they'll bring back Wale. Apparently he was here a few years ago, but maybe we'll see somebody else. I know a lot of people would like to see some concerts, you know.
Yeah.
Most colleges and universities do have somebody usually come on to campus,
right.
And that would be fun. So maybe that would maybe also entice more people to come too. But if they are building this, I would also like to see commencement be put in there.
Sure, absolutely. So with all this, what's your take on this? I mean, because your tuition's gone up a little bit. Now, obviously, your tuition isn't going to be going to this, but, you know, it's becoming more of a financial strain to come here. Granted, this is a fundraising scheme, but, like, what does this mean for you as a student still being here? Does this bring more value to your education, a new facility?
Personally, it doesn't affect me really at all. Like, I don't really see how it benefits me because I'm not a student athlete that will be using that facility. Yeah, I'll be in there for some other events and everything, but I'm just fine in the Sewell Center too. You know, I think a lot of students would rather see some other things after the recent blow up with the, you know, you even heard about it, I'm sure, the housing fiasco.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, but as they said, they wanted to stress that none of the money towards the new arena will have went anywhere else. Like, it's just people who want to specifically sponsor athletics.
Yeah. There's not $50 million that's in an account that's just earmarked for facility. It's not earmarked for anything else. All this money is just going to be coming in.
Exactly.
So, and we don't have a timetable for this either.
They want to have it open and operational in the fall of 2018.
So that's less than 3 years.
Yes.
Oh, no, fall of 2018. So that's a little bit. That's not very long.
No.
That's not very long.
No.
So, okay. Well, if there's any updates, you'll be updating us accordingly.
Be following armucenturymedia.com, and we will keep you updated as we find things out.
Wonderful. Hannah Smith, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, Nick Bozzelli has some commentary on this, the possibility of a new facility. He has an interesting spin on why we shouldn't have this new facility, and he breaks down some numbers with us, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. We want to thank Delaney and Hannah for joining us. We have a shortened show, so I'm really happy that they were able to come in and provide us with some great information that's very important, good things going on Robert Morris University campus. And you can follow their articles on rmucentralmedia.com. And then here's another article that's going to be coming up very soon is Nick Bozzelli is writing a... Let's call it an exposé of sorts.
You can say that. You can call it an editorial, however you want to phrase it.
A rant.
What it boils down to is...
I'm as mad as hell,
and I'm not going to take
this anymore.
Monday night, after hearing the news about the new arena, you know, everyone on campus knows it was coming, and it was just a matter of time. But for some reason, I got inspired. You know, I was... I was upset. I was mad.
I had a dream
that RMU shouldn't build this arena, and let me explain why. So after I did this, I sat down with my good friend Kyle Gorski the following day. Shout out to him. He's right over there. And we started crunching numbers. He mainly because I'm not good with math. That's why I'm a journalist. And, you know, I'm like, hey, this arena shouldn't be built. Here's why. Let's look at the numbers because, as we all know, numbers do not lie. And so we went through... We started to crunch some numbers, and some of the really big statistics that we found is that since Andy Toll's been head coach, so over the past five seasons, RMU owns a 770 winning percentage at home. Okay, to break that down, it's 57-17 at home in 5 years.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. That's more. That's great.
That's better than pretty good.
That's really, really, really good. Okay. So if you're honest take, if you just saw that number, be like, all right, here's this team. They are 770 at home in the past 5 years.
Okay.
How many people do you think go to their games? You would say?
Well, how big does the Sewell Center fit?
3,000.
3,000. Okay.
So if you had to say, hey, on average, I bet X amount of people attend
each game. On average, consistently, I would want to say at least, let's say half. I want to say 1,500.
But if you just saw that number, if you knew nothing about Robert Morris basketball, and you just saw 770 winning percentage, 3,000-seat arena, you would say, hey, I bet.
Yeah.
You would still say 1,500?
Well, I would say 1,500 to closer to capacity. I'd like to think, just for that winning record at home.
But is that paying individuals, or is it student-based?
I don't...
Student-based, it's... total population tickets that they give out.
Okay.
So students get tickets when they enter.
Yeah.
Okay.
The attendance should be between 1,500 and 3,000.
The only number that doesn't count is the 20 of us that work RMU TV or the four people that work for Paige. So basically it's the people that don't work the game, which you figure those are about 40 to 50. So that number can't even really be added into there. Okay. So they're planning on building a 4,000 to 4,500 seat arena on campus
right.
in the Lower Slope parking lot. So if we looked at, we crunched some numbers going all the way back to the 2012-2013 season.
Okay.
During that season, they averaged 1,196 people per game. Okay. So if you look at that, Soul Center holds 3,000 people. That means that on any given game day, the Chuck was 40% full, 60% empty. Okay. So, but if you remember that season, that was the year of Kentucky.
That was the Kentucky year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many do you think attendance would go up or down the following year because of Kentucky?
Because you beat Kentucky on your home court, I would obviously like to think that at least the first portion of the season, attendance would have been up.
You're right, but how much do you think it went up by?
Well, if what the previous year the average was, you said 11?
Yeah, 1100? Roughly like 1,200.
Okay, 1,200. So next season you beat Kentucky, I want to say 2,000.
Okay, it went up a little bit. It went up an additional 290 per year.
Only
okay?
290.
So you're up to 1,500 the following year.
Okay.
Still not bad, but you're roughly 50% capacity.
Okay.
Okay. So then that year, St. John's, okay, another NIT win.
Right.
Don't you think it would go up from 1,500? Or do you think it would go back down below the 2012-13 mark, lower than that?
Another quality win in postseason on your home court, I would still like to think that it would go up.
It went down to 1,100. So that means this past season they averaged less fans than they did in 2012-2013. Okay?
Okay.
I found that a lot shocking. I don't know about you guys, but if you look at it, the fact that there are 351 Division I NCAA basketball programs in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Out of those, there are 95 that had worse attendance in 2014 than Robert Morris. So that means RMU was ranked, I don't do the math, it was somewhere around like 257 or something like that.
It was like 254.
254 out of total basketball attendance.
That's not good.
Now, if you look at the programs that were lower than it, they are some NEC teams. There are a lot of NEC teams with a lot better attendance records than Robert Morris.
Right.
Just to add a point, the NEC is the bottom conference in terms of attendance in the NCAA Division I basketball.
Dead last in attendance.
Dead last.
This conference.
Okay.
So you look at your independence, all right? New Jersey Institute of Technology, obviously lower than Robert Morris. Stetson, a couple teams from the Atlantic Sun. But overall, out of the NEC, RMU is consistently ranked about around 5 or 6 out of 10. So middle of the pack. Not great. Okay. So that's why I don't think this arena should be built. If you look at it, you're never going to fill it. If you average on a NCAA tournament basketball team with two good NIT wins over the past 2 years, if you average 1,100 fans per game 1 year, 1,200 the next year,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're never going to fill a 4,000-seat arena, 5,000-seat arena, no matter how good the team is. Part of that deals with where Robert Morris basketball is in a non-basketball market. So if you look at it, obviously everyone knows Pitt. In terms of college basketball in Pittsburgh, it goes Pitt, Duquesne, Robert Morris. Now, people here seem to think that Robert Morris has overtaken Duquesne in terms of
I would like to think.
You would like to think. My personal opinion is that they haven't, based solely on fan base, alumni, and overall attendance. Now, Duquesne, the Palumbo, holds 4,000. Duquesne's consistently ranked up there with about 2,200-2,300 per game. Okay. So,
to be fair, they're also in a different conference, the Atlantic.
Yeah. So that's what does it. As long as Robert Morris remains in the Northeast Conference, no disrespect to mid-major college basketball and the A-10, still it's a little bit higher mid-major. But if you remain in the NEC, you're never going to draw. Partly because you can't draw people, big conferences, to play at your arena unless you do the home and home.
Mm-hmm.
We had that last year. Army traveled to Buffalo, alumni arena in Buffalo. This year, Buffalo came here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Sunday afternoon game, okay? How many people do you think were there? Buffalo, they turned out to be an NCAA tournament team. They had Bobby Hurley as the head coach, who, you remember him back in the 90s with Duke, playing alongside Christian Laettner?
Yeah.
How many people do you think would go to a game like that?
And it's a Sunday.
Sunday at 4 o'clock.
Not the Steelers were not here.
And it wasn't during winter break. Yeah. December 7th.
A little over 1,000.
433.
433
lowest
people
of all season against a team that won their conference.
So do you see any benefits?
I don't
Of this new arena. Now, but before you give an answer, a lot of schools that have gotten new arenas, have made their new arenas, have moved from the conference that they're currently in to a different conference
and
of a little bit more prominence.
Yeah, and I actually detail that scenario as well in my article. So if you look at the last two Northeast Conference teams to build new arenas, Quinnipiac and Monmouth.
Okay.
They are now in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, MAAC.
Yeah. The MAAC.
Yeah. Monmouth built their – Quinnipiac built their new arena in 2007.
Right.
Monmouth in 2009. They are roughly what Robert Morris projects, okay? Because currently the NEC doesn't have a basketball arena bigger than 3,500 seats. So Robert Morris would be about 1,000 above that, which is right where Quinnipiac and Monmouth were. They left the NEC they left the NEC a few years after they built these new arenas. Mm-hmm. So they had the new arenas in the NEC for roughly 3-4 years, mm-hmm. and then they were gone. So that is a definite scenario to joining a bigger conference. But if you look at it, what feasible bigger conference could Robert Morris actually go to and be competitive in? If you look at the Atlantic 10, possibly, because you look at teams like Fordham, Duquesne, St. Bonaventure, who are lower tier, but why would the Atlantic 10 want to put two teams in the Pittsburgh market? You have to look at it that way. They have two teams in the Philadelphia market. Obviously, Philly is basketball crazy.
Yes.
So it would make sense for them to put Robert Morris in the Atlantic 10 there.
But aren't there two schools in the NEC that are relatively close to each other in New York?
Yeah,
like
but you have
three,
to look.
I think.
You
three?
Have to look New York, big basketball market.
Doesn't matter.
It does to. I think it does to a certain extent. If you look at in terms of just overall attendance and what they're looking at, because obviously New York, much bigger market. You can disperse those fans.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have two A-10 teams, you're gonna grow. You're gonna draw more. But one thing that Duquesne does really good is attracting its alumni base. And obviously they've been around a lot longer and they have that alumni base. They're located in the heart of a city and they can have people come from all over. But I still think that's one thing that struggles. But one thing, the only way I see this arena making sense is if they brought hockey into the mix. Okay?
I've talked about this.
You've talked about
it.
The plan that we've heard about has nothing to do with hockey.
That's the one thing that really shocks me.
The reason why you need to bring hockey into here is if you look at it, okay, Division I college hockey is the only thing Robert Morris has that none of the other universities in this region have, correct?
Yeah.
Within 100 miles, okay.
Yeah.
So if you look at the times.
And we've definitely mentioned that on this show before, I think even when Tim King was here.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you look at the times this year that the hockey team has outdrawn the basketball team for games, okay? It's been quite a while. The hockey team has had more people at their games than basketball, okay?
Do you know that? Do you have the number on that?
I didn't crunch the numbers for that yet.
I can pull up.
Dante can pull it up. And
I would argue that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because I've been to predominantly the same amount of, you know, over the course of my 4 years here, and Dante, I know you're in the same boat because we worked for the athletic department, the Army TV, and live sport productions and everything. There has been a steadily gain in attendance at hockey games, and it's been consistent game after game compared mm-hmm. to basketball.
Let's do the numbers from Buzz. You said the biggest basketball game of the year was the Buffalo game, correct?
No, the
smallest.
That was the
430.
Smallest. 430.
Well, like the biggest non-conference game at home. Yeah, or Youngstown?
Biggest non-conference game at home was...
I would say them or Youngstown or Duquesne.
It was Duquesne, actually.
Okay, let's do Duquesne. Now, Duquesne was over break, correct?
Duquesne, yes, it was 2024.
They got 2024 for their biggest non-conference game. Well, for the men's hockey, because the arena holds 1,300, the numbers are kind of skewed. But for, let's say, their biggest conference game, Mike, what do you think? Would it be fair to say Air Force?
I would think Air Force, because you have a lot of people coming from the 9/11 airlift wing just from that.
RIT fans travel.
We'll go with RIT. Air Force was the highest draw, was 874. RIT at home. It was early in the season. We'll go with the Friday or Saturday. Which games get more?
I would assume Saturday.
Friday got 725. Saturday got 654. But granted, those numbers, you have to look at the size of the arena.
So here's why hockey would make sense in this arena. Obviously, scheduling would be tough. Do it like Quinnipiac does. You walk in, you have a hockey rink to the left, basketball court to the right. They share the common foyer. Obviously, you need a lot of ground to do that. But judging where the Army wants to build this arena now, there's not a lot of ground, so they're going to have to fill in that hillside by the neighborhood. Can lead to a lot of mess. And what they're planning to do over the next 3 years and $50 million, I just don't see it being done for that price in that location. But why hockey would make sense is because if you brought in opponents like Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, with hockey you can attract a lot bigger Division I hockey programs to come to a smaller school than you can basketball. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if you threw a Penn State or Ohio State in a 4,000 seat on-campus hockey arena, that place would be sold out. Am I right?
I would love Penn State coming here for hockey non-conference.
Exactly.
And for the Three Rivers, they drew, well, granted, this is a console, they drew 6,200.
You could have no trouble selling out a 4,000 seat arena.
And my question is for this, with this new arena, look at what they're doing with the 1921 club. That's so they can build up for a project such as this.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's jammed in that arena. And then you look at the hockey arena, there's no room for media. There is a Seoul, but there's no room for media. And when you do have a team like Penn State and RIT, they're bringing a ton of their media people, if it's from their college to the local areas, or, you know, heck, even just the local radio stations in general are just coming to cover it because it's a big name school. There's no room for media, and there's no box area.
Yeah.
So one last point here, something Kyle pointed out to me, and you can even talk about that. If you want to spend $50 million on a new arena, take $25, renovate Seoul. Take the rest, build housing. What else do we need? Parking, a left-hand turn lane that no Moon Township doesn't want to pay for, Robert Morris doesn't want to pay for.
But I think the problem is with Seoul is the floor to the ceiling.
Yeah. We'll be waiting patiently for this article to come out.
It will be out and sure to stir some controversy, that's for sure.
But I think the idea, though, Buzz, is good. And, Ben, I'm sure you're right there with, because then you start thinking. And like you said, hockey, to me, it should be a no-brainer. Because then you also got to look at it. The Pens are building their new facility. They're going to be losing business with the Pens Elite team. So there's a lot of going into it. And, you know, just the thought and the idea that you're doing it, I'm definitely looking forward to reading it. And I'm definitely going to tell other people to check it out.
And you can find this article coming up very soon on rmucenturymedia.com. That's going to do it for the show today. I want to thank Hannah Smith and Delaney Hassel for coming on today as well. It was a little bit of a shortened show, but hey, we had a lot packed into that, and I'm really happy. We will see you next week. You're listening to Army Chat on Army Radio, your campus, your voice.